Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Wall Street ended its session higher with regional banks rallying, but here in Asia Pacific, markets are trading higher this morning on the back of that rally. Joining me now as we break down all the market action, looking very cool on this wet Tuesday. Ryan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. And you are looking dressed up for the studio as well.
Yeah, I'm in my winter wear. Yes, as we all are here in the studio. It's very cold to keep the machinery alive.
Yeah, only Dan's going a bit, no.
He must have some Latin blood in him.
What's
He's very hot-blooded male. I think last week we felt like we should call this segment the banking report because, you know, of all the bank news and that sentiment really holding this morning, the fate of U.S. and European banks continuing to dominate investor attention and sentiment. U.S. stocks rallying overnight on news that UBS would buy embattled Swiss rival Credit Suisse. The Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed more than 1%. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ chalked up solid gains as well. Same cannot be true, though, for some of the banks that have been in focus. Let's look at U.S. bank First Republic. It's received a $30 billion U.S. dollar infusion of cash from 11, a consortium of big banks last night. And the honeymoon effect from that news didn't last very long. Overnight, First Republic shares prices plunged 47%. That's right. They're down nearly 90% since March the 8th, the day that Silicon Valley Bank in California set off a financial panic. So what is going on? Are investors still in panic mode?
Yeah, a bit of a chill going through the banking sector. So here we've got First Republic, despite the lifeline from what you've outlined, $30 billion from their rescue package from 11 of the biggest U.S. banks. It's there on the table for them to use if they need it. But it is a crisis of confidence at First Republic. It's been downgraded by S&P Global Ratings. And I think here's what's important to note what they said. So they say the rescue package, even though it should ease near-term liquidity pressures, but it may not solve the substantial business, liquidity, funding and profitability challenges that is likely to face First Republic. And I think this is worth noting because of what's transpired with SVB, Silvergate Capital and Signature. People are, to a certain extent, a bit jittery and may be more inclined to moving money away from some of these smaller banks like First Republic towards other bigger banks. And that is, I think, reflective of the caution that has just set on many investors, market watchers, as we see headlines after headlines around negative news in the banking sector, people are just flocking to what they deem to be safer places.
Now, analysts say the current risk to the financial system, not really one of contagion, that's a word normally used, that one firm's collapse, you know, will lead to the collapse of other banks and losses. Instead, they say the issue is that banks across the U.S. may be engaged in the same risky practices as Silicon Valley Bank was. SVB's balance sheet was hit by rising interest rates. So one study says that as many as 190 lenders in the U.S. could fail if that argument stands. On another note, yesterday on this show, we noted that Saudi National Bank could have perhaps stemmed the selling in shares of Credit Suisse and saved the Swiss lender if it had agreed to increase its stake in the bank. Instead, last week, you remember, Saudi Bank said it would not do that. And as a result, it's taken a big hit from Credit Suisse's fall. Well, today we can put a number to that hit. It's $1 billion U.S. dollars. Huge. All right, one more banking headline I want to share with you. I came across a really interesting article on Bloomberg entitled, "Are the Ultra-Rich Ready for Singapore After Credit Suisse?" Now, it seems DBS is hoping to win over some of Credit Suisse's super-rich clients. What do you think? Is Credit Suisse's fall good for Singapore's banks?
Well, on the surface, you might imagine it to be so. You can argue the case that, hey, the money needs to go somewhere. And that somewhere could be one of the three local banks, DBS, UOB, OCBC, or whoever is, you know, in Singapore. So that is the, I guess, superficial surface look of how this could play out. But of course, the bigger question is, how much can they benefit from it? And then that's the next question. Even though if the money goes into some of these banks, will they make money from them? Because if you look back at how the year played out last year, the wealthy did put money in some of these local banks, and we are talking about a lot more Chinese families going to the likes of DBS and OCBC and UOB. They did not do a lot with the money because of how the market landscape was. They were just a bit more cautious, and effectively, the income fees from that segment did not rise a lot despite the inflows of money. So that is the question mark here. Even though they might capture some of the monies, will they be able to monetize, so to speak, the inflows? So that's one question mark. And of course, the other question mark is what the Fed does. Even though we could see, theoretically, DBS and the likes making more money from things like giving out loans or investment activities, there's a big question mark about the cost of funding and whether they can get as big a profit as the year before when we saw aggressive rate hikes, and they could price in higher margins into whatever they did. But now with the prospects of the rate hikes starting to slow down, you have to also take that into account in terms of the expected growth and margins this year. So all in, even though it might be able to capture some of the Credit Suisse crowd leaving Credit Suisse, it's a question of how much it can benefit or maximize the inflows.
Interesting point. So who will mop up Credit Suisse's wealthy clients, and will Asia likely benefit? All right, apart from banking news, let's turn to social media and to TikTok. This week is really shaping up to be a make-or-break week for the video sharing app. The Biden administration considering banning TikTok's use in the U.S. or forcing its Chinese owners to sell the company to U.S. owners. TikTok CEO is set to testify before the U.S. Congress to try to ease concerns about whether it shares U.S. data with the Chinese government. In the meantime, TikTok is also taking a pretty novel approach to drum up support. It makes sense if you think about its business. What is TikTok doing, Ryan?
Yeah, it does make sense, right? Who is going to benefit or lose out when it comes to the entire TikTok saga? It's the influencers. So send in the army of influencers to the White House. Just imagine the steps on Capitol Hill being filled up with all these guys. At some point, maybe it'll work, but that is the prospects. And it's interesting to note some reports citing that TikTok is paying for the cost of sending these guys to Washington, D.C. So maybe these influencers might have some influence.
Can you imagine that? An army of influencers descending on the steps of Washington. Unimaginable, actually. So novel. Okay, let's fast forward. Let's say the Biden administration says ByteDance must shut TikTok down or must sell it to an American company. How likely is that? Is the possibility TikTok could find a buyer?
Yeah, taking a bite out of ByteDance could be hard to swallow for many companies because of the baggage that comes with such a deal. And there are a couple of things here. First is the price. $50 billion or more. That is what some analysts are expecting TikTok could command. So who can pay that much? And there are only a few names you can throw in the hat. The likes of Meta, Google, Microsoft, maybe a few others. Would they want to pay in this environment? The question, or the answer to that question, probably they would be able to find better opportunities for that type of cash. So maybe not. And then you've got the other idea or other question about antitrust. Now, this will just raise questions about becoming a bigger social media company. And then it will just invite more scrutiny from either side, the Republicans or Democrats. So you've got that also in the backdrop. And then you have the bigger problem of how to execute this entire deal towards the objective that Washington wants, which is to split it up from everything to do with China. And I think that is the hardest part because it's so hard to unravel what part is connected to China HQ and how to split it up so that it's cleanly, at least based on perceptions, away from anything to do with Chinese influence. So that is potentially the harder part to execute and to convince that it can be done.
Imagine a company being told you have to divest your shares, your Chinese owners, or sell your app, or be banned. TikTok's popularity continues to rise. The latest figures show the app has 150 million monthly users on it. Are you on TikTok?
I am on TikTok, browsing it for research. How about you, Michelle?
I am on TikTok. I'm at Michelle Martin Radio. I think.
What are videos to put up on TikTok anyways?
I tell people what to spend their money on.
Ah, okay, okay. So I will check it out and maybe look forward to some of your dance videos soon.
One more note about the company. This may surprise listeners. It certainly surprised me. TikTok CEO is a Singaporean. Who is it?
Yeah, this also surprised me. So Shou Zi Chu is the person's name. So this came up because of some of the proceedings. This CEO is going to be making his testimony in Congress this week. So it turns out that there are some reports that argue against how TikTok is independent in that sense. So he's supposed to be the global CEO, but reports say that anything to do with the important stuff, all the decisions, all the influence, all still comes from China. So that is the essence of what is the claims around the dependence still on China around TikTok's global service. Everything that's important is still being decided by the powers to be in China. So that's the, I guess, argument that he has convinced in Congress that, hey, he is the global CEO, despite reports that his decision-making power is limited. This is going to be a tough one to argue.
Wow, I'd love to sit across him. Shu Zi Chu, the Singaporean, ask him how he manages, you know, his boss's expectations.
39 years old.
Yeah, how do you manage your boss's expectations at 39 when your boss is a Chinese parent company? Really interesting. One more note, it turns out ByteDance is not just one, but two very popular apps in the US. In addition to TikTok, there is a video editing tool called CapCut, and that is one of the most downloaded apps in the US. Going to check that out for sure, CapCut. All right, let's bring the conversation to Singapore now, where an unusual corporate story has caught my eye. Apparently, a disagreement between the heads of two mainboard listed companies turned violent and ended up in court. The story involves the CEO of the logistics company, the Vibrant Group, and the former executive chairman of KTL Global. And one of these men pushed the other down some stairs. What happened?
Yeah, I'm not sure I've been pushed down the stairs before.
Imagine
have you? The pain. I've tripped down the stairs before, rolled down a few times. I can imagine what this guy went through. So let me paint the story for you here. You've got one CEO pushing down the other, apparently, down the stairs. And it was because of an owe money, pay money situation. So that's the essence of it.
Wow.
So here is the longer story. So you've got three deals worth $2.4 million. So this involves some merit deals, which involves conditions such as paying back the guy with in time to come. So apparently, as part of the deal, this did not go through with the repayment part side of things. So one of them, Kwa Kien Kiong, who is the CEO of mainboard listed logistics company Vibrant Group. So he was handling these three deals with Tan Tok Tan, the former chairman of KTL Global. So he went to his office at KTL Global to ask for some of that money back according to his agreement. But he did not get the money, and somehow someone went down the stairs.
I would like to know how many stairs.
I would also be keen to find out. But even that is under dispute. So one party says he was pushed. The other party says he was trying to hold him back from falling down the stairs.
Interesting. I think here's where video evidence would come in really useful. All right, time from a flight downstairs to a game of up or down. Are you ready, Ryan?
Let's go.
Okay, let's start with Amazon.
All right, that is going to be a down.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a big down for the tech sector, yet more layoffs. So Amazon, 9,000 more jobs will be cut. And you have to bear in mind, it already cut 18,000 jobs back in November. And among those being hit, cloud services is big growth engine, AWS, plus HR and advertising, including Twitch. So it is spreading across Amazon.
Punishing for Amazon workers, that is, these waves of layoffs. So Amazon laying off another 9,000, definitely a down in my books. Let's look at another e-commerce platform. That's PDD, the owner of Pinduoduo.
All right, PDD is going to be a down for me, and this is because revenue has fallen short on some weak consumer spending in China. So it is quite reflective of what's been playing out. The consumer strength in China just not bouncing back as much as what some are hoping for. So PDD seeing a bit of a patchy recovery.
All right. And from Pinduoduo, they earned about 40 billion yen in the last quarter, by the way, but that came in below expectations. So definitely down for me. Let's look at Netlink.
All right, Netlink, the guys who lay out the cables to give you the fiber network for your broadband, it's an up for me. And that's because UOB Kay Hian has upgraded its call on Netlink to buy from hold. So it's one of those high-yielding safe haven stocks they are eyeing. So they have raised, or rather they have reduced the target price from $1.05 to $1.02 to reflect a lower terminal growth rate of 1% versus the earlier assumed 2%. So all in, still good news for those looking at stocks to find safe havens.
All right. So Netlink investors, UOB Kay Hian thinks Netlink is a good buy. It's upgraded its rating of the stock. It thinks it's a good safe haven investment. That's Netlink. Let's look at Genting Singapore.
Genting is going to be an up. So this is with an upgrade from Maybank Securities from hold to buy. Ooh. And this is with the recovery story in Singapore, where we are possibly looking at more tourists coming in, especially with the China reopening story. And this is one of the expectations that we will see a stronger crowd, more visitors from China recovering to pre-COVID levels by the end of the year. So that is going to help with Genting Singapore's numbers.
Have you been to RWS recently?
Not quite, so I might find my way there eventually later this year.
I was wondering whether the crowds have returned, you know, what that's like on the ground. I haven't been there myself in a while, I have to say. All right, so Maybank likes Genting Singapore, thinks it's a good investment, and it expects the stock to benefit from the return of Chinese tourists, so an up for Genting Singapore in my books as well. Our last story today is part of the Elon Musk files, a continuing saga. So Musk set an automatic responder for media requests to Twitter, and this one, I'm not sure if it's funny, leaves a sour taste. Anyone who contacts Twitter with a media request receives a poop emoticon in reply. What do you make of this?
I am struggling to find out or figure out how Elon Musk gets time to do all these things. So as you might know, Twitter, as with many other Elon Musk companies, they do not have a comms department. They do not have a PR department. So now you get an auto response message. If you try to reach out, if you're a member of the press for a press statement or what have you, you will get a poop emoji.
Can you imagine receiving that?
I wouldn't know what to make of it still. Yeah, poop emoji, is it?
You've seen a poop emoji, right? It's got cute little eyes.
How do I make you... What am I supposed to
it's
take away from
poop
emoji? Yeah, so is this someone being cheeky or not being offensive?
He's gone beyond words, Elon Musk, apparently. All right, well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you, as always. Ryan Huang in his raincoat, ready to head out into the cold, wet, wild world. We appreciate it, Ryan.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.